And so what we're doing is, again, is sawing off the limb we're sitting on. We already use roughly 1.5 times the resources, the renewable resources.
Can you just list for us some of the mammals, the kind of warm and cuddly mammals that we all grew up with, that we all love, that are on the verge of extinction?
Well, one of the not so warm and cuddly, but very interesting animals that we grew up with are the rhinoceri, the mm-hmm. rhinoceroses, if you wish. Mm-hmm. The main ones in Africa, which are best known, are the black rhino, which is almost gone. It tends to live singly, and it's a browser. It eats bushes. Basically, has a nasty temperament. That's true. They're not exactly sweet. And the white rhino, the white refers actually to a South African term which means wide. They have wide mouths, and they eat grass and they sort of look like vacuum cleaners. And they are herd animals, and they're not quite as in so much danger. But the main reason those interesting animals are in danger is that there are idiots in places like China and Central Asia that think their horns have aphrodisiac properties, and so they're hunted for their horns. Poaching is very strong and is wiping them out, and they're used also as daggers for males in parts of Central Asia. But the most horrifying story I've heard in connection with the rhinoceros is that there was a fair-sized opinion among conservation biologists that they would be saved by Viagra, because we have a chemical now that does what it deals with erectile dysfunction, which was the putative power of rhinoceros horn. It wasn't real. It didn't work. But I was told last year that now the traders in rhinoceros horn, when they grind up the horn, are grinding Viagra in it so that it will actually work to keep the market going. It's so serious now that South Africa is sending its rhinos to Botswana, which is a country just to the north of South Africa that has a much more conservation-oriented government and an easier way of protecting the rhinos. So there will be huge attempts are being made to preserve the rhinos, but they look like they're in deep trouble. They are in deep trouble, no question. And the other three species are in even worse trouble. There's one in India and two in Southeast Asia, smaller unless the ones in Southeast Asia are virtually gone. The Indian rhinos are not. Then, from the point of view of cuddly, anybody who's ever watched elephants play, has ever watched elephants help a youngster, elephants mourn their dead. Elephants communicate with each other in very many different ways and are absolutely fascinating animals. But unfortunately, they have hanging off of their faces tusks that are made of ivory. And again, the threat to the elephants, which are declining very, very rapidly, is poaching to get the ivory, and the main markets, again, are in China, where, a huge portion of the human population is. So elephants are in great trouble. Some of the people may have seen pangolins, although I've never seen one alive in the wild. I tried in Africa a few weeks ago to see one, but they're nocturnal and they burrow. In the ones I was looking at in Africa. But they're the most endangered mammals on the planet. There's something like 12 or 13 species. They're called, they're anteaters, basically, and they look like they're reptiles because their hairs have fused into scales that serve as armor, and when they're attacked, they roll up into a ball, which is entirely armor, scaly anteaters. And beautiful animals, but unhappily, the Chinese think their scales have aphrodisiac properties, and they're considered a delicacy. And in China, you can take a train from station to station and eat an endangered animal at every station. And pangolins are harvested in Asia in huge numbers to serve that trade. So three extremely interesting groups of mammals that are in deep trouble because of idiot ideas of what's valuable. After all, ivory's pretty, but you can do the same thing with plastic. And, of course, the aphrodisiac properties are simply nonsensical, except when evil traders are putting Viagra into the mix.
Yeah, and while you were speaking, you know, all the other animals were kind of popping up in my mind, too, and I just, I feel this really deeply, but in case people don't really get it, one of the chapters in your book is about why it all matters. Can you talk about that?
Well, it matters, by the way, I should say the iconic endangered animal is the panda, and
yeah.
We're struggling to save it, but in nature, habitat destruction, again, is a major. Several of my good friends are working hard on its conservation, but it's touch and go, and I think go is more likely over the next few decades than touch. But anyway, the reason it matters basically is there are two reasons. One is an ethical, aesthetic reason. The only other living things we know about in the entire universe are on our planet, and the ones we know best and the ones we relate to most as human beings are birds and mammals. And yet, birds are declining everywhere. North America, we have many fewer birds than we had 30 or 40 years ago. Mammals are in trouble across the planet, losing their populations. We're losing extremely interesting things. The stories you can tell about the behavior of birds and mammals, about, the wonders of migration, both of mammals and birds, the way animals communicate, the significance of bird songs, the aesthetic pleasures of listening to bird songs or seeing animals in the wild. I can't tell you. I mean, it's, some people may not care, but for instance, I've sat and watched for an hour or two 20 or 30 elephants playing with their offspring, with baby elephants in a pond. They're just amazing animals, and they react in ways that one can't help but relate to. I worked for a long time at Gombe Stream, which is where Jane Goodall pioneered working on chimpanzees.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went there the first time, which was many decades ago, I was convinced that I should be very scientific and not interpret their behavior in a human-oriented way. And that lasted about 10 minutes when Flo, one of the older females, was cuddling one of her offspring, one of her babies. And the baby got loose and ran and then saw a stick, appeared to think it was a snake, and got terrorized and jumped back into Flo's arms, and Flo patted her head. You could just see her saying, now, don't worry. And that was the end of me not interpreting things in a human-oriented way. And I think, actually, anybody who has a dog or has loved a dog understands that. You cannot avoid relating to other animals in ways that we relate to each other. And so one major reason for saving these things is they're so damn interesting, related to us, teach us things, and basically add enormous interest to our lives. And that's, I'm not the only one. I'm just not just a crazed biologist. Think of the number of people who are bird watchers. Millions of people enjoy birds. If we wipe out the birds, there isn't going to be any more bird watching. If we wipe out the whales and porpoises, there's not going to be any more listening to their songs and wondering about their very interesting behavior, like helping injured individuals and so on. So that's an area which I personally, and I think many, many, many people relate to. They care that we have birds and mammals. And the other is, of course, what I was discussing before. don't have any birds and mammals, we almost certainly won't have any of us, or our lives will be very poor, because birds and mammals play all sorts of roles in the ecosystems that support our lives. We are embedded in complicated systems powered primarily by the sun that see to it that we get food, that our climate is stable, not going the way it is now into more and more disrupted patterns, that we are relatively free from disease, and on and on. And, you know, a lot of the food we get from other animals is direct. I mean, think just of the fisheries. But around the world, one of the things that endangers mammals that is that as the population and birds, is that as the human population grows and food gets more and more short, we tend to harvest more and more of them. We don't treat them sustainably. And bush meat, for example, is a that is food gathered from mammals in the wild or birds in the wild is a major source of extinctions now. And it's particularly serious hunting our closest relatives in Africa, that is gorillas and chimpanzees in particular, for food. And that's a thing that's directly related to the size of the human population. And even more important, the size of the human population is wiping out the habitats that are essential for other animals. And as we do that, we are wrecking our own life support systems. Again, it's just tragic because there's everything to be said for protecting the other life forms on the planet. We should be thinking about how we design a world in which maybe a billion human beings in the end, or maybe just a few hundred million, can live rich lives the way people in North America live them, in company of a vast array of other animals, particularly mammals and birds, and do it for millions of years. What we're doing now is looking at whether or not we can manage to maintain a few billion people in utter luxury for maybe another 20 or 30 years if we're lucky. And we've got to take a long-term view of these things, and that's why it's so important. We're not just sawing off the limb that we're sitting on, we're sawing it off with a chainsaw, not with a hacksaw. We're going much too fast, and we show no signs of even recognizing the problem. We've had presidential debates in the United States many times, and we're having them now. In the Republican presidential debates, not a single serious problem has been mentioned. Not the population problem, not the climate problem, not the toxics problem, because one of the things that we're attacking our life support systems with is a vast array of new toxic materials, including micro pieces, tiny, tiny pieces of plastic that are now getting into everybody and everything, and we don't know what the long-term results are going to be. But toxicity, the toxification of the planet, hasn't been mentioned in the debates. The fact that our epidemiological environment, our vulnerability to vast plagues, has not gotten into the debates. The connection between population size and the amount of greenhouse gases we put into the atmosphere and the resultant disruption of our climate, not been mentioned in the debates. And actually, the whole question of equity, really, that is why in the United States we have the Ronald Reagan's program of not Robin Hood, but Hood Robin. We steal from the poor and give to the rich. So the rich get richer and richer and people get more and more immiserated. Not a topic in the debates. The fact that we cannot solve our problems country by country when they're global problems like climate disruption, not mentioned in the debates, that we need to think very hard about how we design a world that isn't run by a state system that's clearly out of date, not mentioned in the debates. So it's very depressing. We're in deep trouble. We face existential problems. Civilization, there's a big argument among biologists about whether the chances of avoiding are 1% or 10%, not mentioned in the debates. So Sorry, I didn't mean to rant at you.
No, I'm glad you did. I'm going to just stop you for a minute. We're speaking with Dr. Paul Ehrlich and about his new book, The Annihilation of Nature, Human Extinction of Birds and Mammals. And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I always have to say this. The opinions voiced on the program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers, but just those of myself and Dr. Ehrlich at this point, and I hope the rest of you too, but that I can't know. I want to thank our underwriters for just a moment before we resume our conversation. Peace and Social Justice Program is made possible by the generous contributions of all of you KZFR members and by the CSU Chico Continuing Education Open University. Open University provides an opportunity for individuals to take Chico State classes on a space available basis without going through the admissions process. More information about Open University is available by calling CSU Chico Continuing Education at 898-6105 or by visiting rce.csuchico.edu and by the Disability Action Center, dedicated to gaining social and economic justice for people with disabilities. The Disability Action Center can be reached by calling 893-8527 or at actionctr.org. I'd also like to thank Artoberfest, Chico's month-long arts and cultural celebration. Once again, the Artoberfest guide will be available at artoberfest.net, and you can list your event for free by clicking on the contact tab. The 21st Oroville Salmon Festival, Hasbeans Business Technology Solutions, and Halls Media Group are proud to support Artoberfest. And lastly, iGreen, live in a bubble with clean air, comfort, and clean energy for your home. iGreen turns a house into a healthy environment by addressing the core components: heating and cooling, installation and repair, insulation, windows, daylighting, water heating, and solar energy to create comfort and eliminate energy bills. iGreen finds the rebates and will file the paperwork. Tax credits and financing are also available. More information by calling iGreen at 230-0656, the Energy Efficiency Division of Green Construction Services. Dr. Ehrlich, thank you so much for being with me today. I want to go on and keep talking about your book. I'm glad you brought in all those other things, and don't hold back. just say what you.
Holding back too much.
No, you haven't been, but I love it. So there's a chapter called "Drivers of Death" in your book, and I know that sounds pretty terrible, folks, but it's really important that you have this very simple equation about the impact of the human enterprise, which is all of us, which is the product of population size multiplied by the per capita consumption or affluence multiplied by environmental impact of technologies. So can you talk about affluence and technologies as things that are affecting this global collapse of our everything?
Yeah, of course, it's not just how many people you have, but what the people do. So one of the confusions that's common in our society is the idea that our problems in environmental problems are caused by the poor who don't have the capability of protecting the environment and so on. Actually, the problem with the rich is much more serious, because it is consumption that the total wrecking of our life support systems is caused by human consumptive activities. You have to mine to get the materials to make cell phones and cars and so on. You've got to farm to get the food for people to consume. You've got to graze to get food for people to consume. And therefore, the people who do the most consumption are the most dangerous to the environment. In other words, it's almost exactly the opposite of the common idea. It's too many rich people is the real problem on the planet. Too many people who consume too much. And, of course, we have too many people who are not able to consume enough, the people who are not getting enough food. So the iPad equation was originally developed by John Holdren, who's the president's science advisor, and me a very long time ago to counter the idea that the problem was the poor, because the poor are not the big consumers. They are. They do create. I mean, the bigger the poor populations, the worse off our life support systems are. But the bigger the rich populations, our life support systems are even more threatened by that. And so that's the reason for the IPAT equation. And the drivers of death are a set of things that most everybody can relate to if they think about it. One is all animals require proper habitats, and the major driver of death probably on the planet at the moment is habitat destruction, particularly if you count rapid climate change as a factor in habitat destruction. In other words, we are already dramatically altering the forests of North America with the increasing droughts. And so on. And of course, habitat destruction in California, our state is burning. I don't know whether you can see the smoke at the moment up there, but you probably have in the last little while.
Yes.
Another driver of death is over-harvesting, be it rhinos for horn, many species of fish that are over-harvested and so on. So that's another driver of death. And toxification is a huge driver of death, but we don't know enough about it now. We do know that it's affecting all kinds of other animals. All the persistent organic pollutants we're putting into the environment do things like disrupt the reproduction of polar bears, give us reptiles that have that are intersexes and can't reproduce and so on, and affect human beings. We are seeing all kinds of signs of the toxic effects on human populations. It may be that we've now produced so many toxins and released them into the environment that the IQ of the entire human species is dropping again, as evidenced by recent debates. if you look, any study that's done of, say, people living downwind of a lead smelter and those upwind, the kids are the ones downwind of the lead smelter, have five IQ points or so less. And basically everybody's now living downwind of something,
right.
And you get that kind of effect. So the drivers of death are very clear, but again, we're not doing anything about them. And the most dramatic example of that is every scientist who has more than 10 IQ points knows that we've got to stop burning fossil fuels and do it as rapidly as possible. There's no real sign of that. We'll see what happens in Paris, but there's not any real sign that even if countries follow their commitments there, that it'll be enough to keep us to having a rise in temperature of, say, 4 or 5 degrees Fahrenheit. And more than that, everybody agrees is utterly catastrophic. So
right.
I'm not exactly a bundle of cheer, but I do have advice for your listeners.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Besides buying the annihilation of nature from Amazon,
right.
And sending it to friends as a Christmas present, and that is you can keep your internal environment in great shape by drinking good California wine, and so that'll help you survive or at least persist through the deterioration of the rest of your environment.
No. That isn't exactly the advice I was hoping you would give us. We have 5 minutes left. Can you talk about some of the effective measures that we could do to rescale this human enterprise of ours that is destroying the planet?
Well, we have lots of people who want to do it, and my advice is to join an organization that's dedicated to doing it, and the best one at the moment, which is dedicated to coordinating all the other non-governmental organization and parts of society that want to do something, is the mob. You can become a mobster. Go to mahb.stanford.edu, mahb.stanford.edu. Cost nothing. Join up, join the discussion, and get working to change things, because it's crystal clear our leaders aren't going to do it. And so we need to get together and get civil society at least putting part of their time into the major issues. That is, how do you get women the rights and opportunities and the access to contraception, which will start us to solve the population problem? How do we find the laws and techniques for reducing overconsumption? How do we see to it that people get a fair break, and that we, that economists learn, A, that you can't grow forever on a finite planet, and B, that distribution is as important as efficiency. In other words, how do we design an economy where you don't have very few people who own everything and the rest of the people in living in misery and fear, and often even in the United States with inadequate diets. So there's a lot to be done. And if you become a mobster, you can at least participate in it. mahb.stanford.edu, and it's in the book, too. So get your copy of The Annihilation of Nature. Give it to your friends for Christmas, and, you know, get involved. If we don't get involved, then when society collapses, it's just going to be too bad.
Yeah, and that's kind of a harsh note. I think that it's true, but we can start by changing our own consumptive patterns and putting political pressure on these people that you're pretty critical of, and I am too, who are in political office. I mean, I think each of us bears a responsibility in this.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
You do what you can yourself. But I think it's always a mistake to think that you can do it just on your own. In other words, the things that have to be changed dramatically are going to have to be changed by political pressure. So while you're trying to live and reduce your own impact on the planet, and one of the best things you can do there is limit your reproduction. I don't believe anybody should have more than two kids, and that ecologically sound, I mean in this generation, one is plenty. But that's the single most ecologically sound thing a person can do, because of course children have children, so and the size of the population is much too large. But political action is the name of the game. If you want to get involved, there are lots of organizations to join, but do join the mob and become a mobster. mahb.stanford.edu. And if you forget that, buy a copy of Annihilation of Nature and look it up in there.
Thank you, Dr. Ehrlich, for being with me today on the Peace and Justice Program. I appreciate you very, very much.
It's my great pleasure. You fight on.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Take care.
All right, so once again, I want to repeat the name of the book, The Annihilation of Nature, Human Extinction of Birds and Mammals by Gerardo Ceballos, Anne H. Ehrlich, and Paul R. Ehrlich. And it is available now, just came out September 21st in hardback. And it, as I mentioned, it has 83 color photos and a lot of educational material about this diverse and incredible planet we live on and the creatures we share it with. So I hope that you'll pick that up for a Christmas gift. And it isn't as depressing as you might think, because there's something about the beauty and diversity of nature that actually fills your heart, makes you feel good. So I know it's difficult when you have a book that's called The Annihilation of Nature, but it's true. So with that note, I'm going to go back to a depressing song by Tracy Chapman and get our next guest on the line. Thank you so much for being with me today on the Peace and Justice Program. The beginning of Okay. It doesn't have to be, well, it may be the beginning of the end, but it doesn't have to be the end. So, folks, buck up and let's move on. I have a very exciting speaker for you now, but I did want to repeat that the annual dinner for the Chico Peace and Justice Center is coming up. It's called Celebrate Community, A Bigger Picture, and Dr. John Rivers from the South Oroville African American Historical Society is going to be our keynote speaker. It's going to be Friday, October 16th at the Chico Masonic Family Center, and there are tickets available at Pullen Cyclery and also at the Chico Natural Foods. So please come out and join us. It would be so good to have you with us. And I want to welcome our guest here on the Peace and Justice program. I want to just kind of tell a little bit about Ken Buttigan. He is the director of Pace Bene, a nonviolent service, an organization dedicated to building a more nonviolent culture that has conducted 800 workshop trainings, retreats, or classes for 35,000 people in the U.S. and around the world. For three decades, he has been an organizer with numerous social movements, including those working for a nuclear-free future, an end to homelessness, and freedom for East Timor. From 1987 to 1990, he was a national coordinator for the Pledge of Resistance, which some of you might remember, which organized coordinated nonviolent action for peace in Central America. He was the founder and organizer for the Declaration of Peace, a nationwide grassroots campaign that called for a concrete plan to end the U.S. war in Iraq also. Since 2013, he has been a lead organizer with Campaign Nonviolence, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. I really, really appreciate you, Ken Buttigan, for being with us today. Welcome to KZFR.
Well, thank you so much, Chris. It's wonderful to be on your program.
Yeah, and I was able to go with another person from our community to the conference that was held in Santa Fe on the 70th anniversary of the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings. We went to the birthplace of the bomb, and that was important, but also to be able to be at this conference and to hear you and other speakers, like the keynote speaker, Reverend James Lawson, who was the architect of the civil rights movement with Dr. King, and other fantastic speakers, and it was just such an exciting time. I just wanted to get you on the radio soon, either before or directly after the week of the campaign nonviolence actions that have just been completed. So welcome.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad you were able to be with us in Santa Fe. It was really powerful to be with people from across the country to mark the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but also to say our future is beckoning to nonviolence and justice.
You know, one of the things, I took some notes on what different people talked about, and one of the things that you said that is that every culture has a narrative. Can you talk about the U.S. narrative and how that might be changed in order to have a sustainable future?
Right. Thank you. Well, for about 5,000 years, there's been a narrative that says that violence is the answer. And we could go very deeply into that history, but essentially, we're told that over and over again. But it's only a narrative. And in fact, we now know, as Gandhi said many times, nonviolence is as old as the hills. He says that we wouldn't have gotten to this point in human history if we hadn't been using nonviolence every day for the last millions of years, really. And we remember, however, the stories of violence, more dramatic or exciting for some people, and that's what we're taught over and over again. And that's been the case in our own country as well, although we're seeing so much great history being written these days that actually establishes that